You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical.
Hi, welcome to Scam Wow. I'm Caitlin Brodnick. We love scams. We love Sue Smith. We love you. Thank you so much for listening, guys. This is part two of the coverage we have of the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum with Brandon Saloy, and it is so much fun. I had the absolute best time. It was the first time we were in person doing an interview. His cat is there because he is my neighbor in my building. I went downstairs. We shared a mic. I apologize for any weird mic sounds. And his cat was ever present and talking and chatting with us the entire time. So it sounds like a crying baby, and it's just a bossy cat. Guys, this is such a fun episode. We really just had the best time, laughed. I hope you watched This Is a Robbery on Netflix, because we really just drag it. It's a ridiculous documentary. It's fabulous. And basically, this crime is still unsolved, which blows our minds, because in 15 minutes, Brandon and I obviously have already solved it. I want to say a big shout out to all you guys listening. Thank you so much for writing reviews and rating us on iTunes and Spotify and everything. It means so much to us. It's the way you can show us you love us, and it really, really helps us. I also want to thank our new Patreon patron, Kiko and Kristen. And guys, thank you so much. We thank our Patreon patrons before, but I didn't give you guys a scam. I think Sue and I were just so enthralled and we missed you guys. We just wanted to get to the work. So I'm going to give you guys the scam to watch out for. And it is a scam of emotional self-care. This is really embarrassing, guys. But this week I mailed a bunch of my hair to, it's so embarrassing, a company to tell me if I have any food intolerances. And I'm saying it. And I told Alan, he was like, okay, are they going to keep your, like, it was embarrassing. I sealed the envelope, double stamped it to make sure it got there, and was so embarrassed to ask him to drop it off in the mailbox when he walked our dog this morning, because I don't think anyone should be doing that. And I think you know something's a scam once you are embarrassed to tell your partner, spouse, or anyone in your life that you're partaking in it. I'm like very stressed out right now with my food allergies. And so instead of going to see a food doctor and a specialist as I should, I had a Groupon deal. This is so embarrassing. And I'm telling you all, please don't do this. I got a Groupon deal for food intolerances. They ask you to send 10 pieces of hair in your own Ziploc bag. They don't even provide a sterile Ziploc bag. They don't even say, wash your hair, make sure it's clean. It's embarrassing. So I just sent that off today. And I say, You guys don't need to do that. I have been scamming myself more than ever, and I don't know if it's because I'm flying solo, if it's because I have mother exhaustion, or if it's because I'm bored and I didn't think this quarantine would keep going. I didn't think like the pandemic would evolve and we'd have new viruses and new stressors. That am I just leaning into the joy of getting scammed? Guys, have I turned a corner? I don't know. But again, thank you guys for being Patreon patrons. Thank you for rating and reviewing us. It really helps us. And I hope you enjoy this episode. Okay, bye. And do you want to describe it for them? What happened?
Well, two men show up on St. Patrick's Day, night of St. Patrick's Day.
In Boston.
So smart. Which is like it's the perfect crime because the museum is nowhere near where like the fanfare happens.
And you know, all the cops are trickling down. They're like all over every place. The cops are also probably enjoying themselves.
I was going to say they're either making sure people don't kill each other or they are drunk themselves.
Right. It's their day off.
Yeah.
And they are like, threefold, like I'm sure there's like about to have a picket line start. They are ready to go to the most chaotic places, and that's where they decide to steal.
Two men show up dressed as Boston police,
and they have the Boston police badge, but they're in like, they kept calling it a hatchback. What kind of car is it?
Yeah, they're in a hatchback. Yeah. A random street pedestrian car.
Yeah, random ass car. Two police officers. Now, you would think like, oh, undercover police.
Yes.
What are they doing? No.
Undercover police usually are not dressed as police.
Yes. In a hatchback. I don't know.
We're undercover. We're just in a hatchback.
Undercover is this shitty car.
Don't worry about it.
This is our gun. I don't think they had guns or anything on them. Any of the paraphernalia.
I don't think so.
No, just the uniform.
But a very suspicious character named Rick Abbott is at the security desk doing the night shift.
So they had two security guards. I think one called in sick, right?
Well, yeah, there was two assigned for each night.
For each night. One guy did rounds and then left.
Yes.
And then Rick Abbott was this, like, they show pictures of him, and it is so creepy. They show it so much in the documentary. And I was like,
of his face wrap?
His face. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They wrapped his face in duct tape, but like how you'd wrap like an old timey doggy in a cartoon who has a toothache. Like an Elmer Fudd toothache, wrapped around the face. Like,
absolutely.
The perimeter of the face, like an
Looney
oval.
Tunes.
Yes. And then like, not on the mouth and kind of not on the eyes. It's so bizarre. And there's pictures of him, and he's looking at the camera, and these are like the police pictures, and it's so creepy.
That was supposedly the way that they tied him up and brought him down.
Yeah, but he looks very comfortable. And he looks very loony toony. And also, he's looking at the camera in this like weird smirky thing that creeps me the fuck out. He looks like he was wrapped up because he likes to eat people, and they were like, let's cover him.
So Rick Abbott buzzes the cops into the building when they say they're cops.
Yes.
Now, and the way that it works is they buzz you in once and you're in this sort of chamber.
Yep.
And then he has to buzz you in a second time. And then you're just in the museum.
And you're in the main part.
And he buzzes them through the second time.
Right. And he also, what was very interesting is during this, right before the cops came in, Rick goes to the side door, opens it up briefly, and closes it. And I believe that was like a signal to the cops to be like, we're good. The other guard isn't here. It's free to go. What was so funny is during the documentary, they're like, does anybody ever open the side door? And I told you about this, Brandon, too. And he's like, yeah, all the time. And Brandon and I both go, for drunk
Well, because
he
they...
He has a big, huge pothead.
They talk about... And now, I want to say that I also listened to a podcast about this.
Great.
That came out years ago.
Fine.
And I have different notes about, like, what the podcast went into. What the things... But, in the podcast, they interviewed some other staff.
What was it called?
And it was called...
We'll link it below, too.
It is called...
Don't worry. We're going to link it below.
Last scene at the Gardner Museum.
Okay, okay.
But another staff member had said, oh, we've seen pizza delivery guys show up. And I was like, so drug dealer.
Yeah, so drug dealers. Right. And he talked about how he liked pot, how he was a little bit of a toker, like how
he would show up stoned or even drunk.
And he was in a bunch of bands, and so he would also talk shit about the museum and say how underrepped it was and under like protected it was. And so he was very vocal about that to any character who would listen.
Absolutely. Someone has a picture of him at a like a party that he threw in the courtyard.
I hate him.
Sitting in Isabella Stewart Gardner's throne.
I hate him.
I could tar and feather this man.
I hate him so much. I guess he's in the interview and he has never been caught or never been convicted or
never,
anything. And I think
never charged.
I think this shady ass character had 100% something to do with it. Opened his fucking beak and
he even says in a interview that was conducted at an Indian restaurant shortly after the heist.
Yes.
He like finishes this interview by saying, I mean, I'm the only person who doesn't really care what happens to the art.
Yeah.
What?
No, this what? Is insane. So also, guys, while all this is happening, so we're describing the scene, and then we'll take it to you that once the police officers get in, they said, gentlemen, this is a robbery. They announced that, the hey-o. Robbers. Hey-o, very, very cordial and bizarre. They spent, I think it was 83 minutes?
Something like that.
Something, 83 minutes, 75 minutes. And
an unthinkable amount of
a
time.
A luxurious amount of time to be a thief in a museum.
Take a bubble bath while you're in.
Oh my
Seriously.
Gosh. Watch a half hour of Whose Line Is It Anyway? I don't know. What are they doing? So he's just like.
So what do cops like?
What do cops like? Short form improv, always. So popular with cops. Oh God. Yeah. So they go in there and they are cutting out. They cut out the pictures with knives. Some of them they've taken down and meticulously taken apart. Yes, it's sort of like a mishmash of how they took the art out.
It's so weird that they spent so long in the museum, yet some of the paintings are cut out of frames as if they'd only been there for like 10 minutes.
Right, like a haphazard, it's like you really would slice weird. It and dice it. But then some, the frames were taken off. Mm-hmm. The frames were like they said that like the staples were the intense canvases put on the frames. And sometimes there are two canvases per frame because they're painted yes. on top of each other. They would painstakingly pull out a bunch of nails. Like some of it
so
was
weird.
Really beautifully and tactfully done.
So my favorite thing that the podcast goes into, I don't know who the woman who conducted the podcast was. She's great. Don't know her name, but she's
great. Link in comments.
She, a line that she kept repeating over the course of the season of this podcast is, someone wanted that goo. So there is a Chinese vase that is among the 13 works
at the last
of art
thing they grabbed. They alluded in the documentary that it was like a last minute grab.
So
but
the
you
thing
think
is,
differently.
It was a grab, but it was also one of those things that had to be meticulously dealt with because it was screwed down underneath the table it was on.
Oh.
So they would have had to turn the table over, unscrew it, and then unscrew it from the table and get it out. So the
was there something in it?
No.
Oh, because you said goo. I was like, is there goo in that vase?
No, it's just called a GU goo.
Oh, goo.
That's
the name of it.
That's the name of it. I thought
there was goop in it that you wanted to smear on your
Gwyneth
face.
Paltrow.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, is it a face cream? How can I get it? I'll do it on the black market.
It's a yonic egg.
Thank you. Yeah.
But it's so funny because like it has nothing to do with any of the other artworks. The other artworks are like from Rembrandt and
yes,
stuff.
Yes, all Renaissance paintings.
There's random, not really that valuable, not really that beautiful Chinese vase that they decided to like spend time getting.
I didn't realize that because in the documentary they make it sound like the cops made it sound like, and we'll talk about that section
like
later.
It was a last minute grab.
Like a grab. But you're saying
it
is a spy, which I've had many dresses of that. But so this wasn't. It was much more tactful.
So strange. But the this woman in the podcast, the whole time she's like, somebody wanted that goo. It's like so dramatic.
Somebody wanted the
goo.
Somebody wanted the goo. And I don't blame them. So this is the mishmash when eventually the scene was turned up. So they leave. And also cool. During this time, it's been told that one of the robbers goes up and down to check on the creepy ass security guard.
As you do.
You know your friends. And then they leave and I think everyone wakes up in the morning and then Rick.
That is the really horrifying part to me is that this one, what was the woman who was running the museum at
Anne
this time?
Anne Holly.
Anne wakes up. It's a Sunday, I think. So I don't think she's even like going
Not
into
rushing.
The museum that day. Wakes up. She has people over at her house. She's making breakfast.
It was St. Patrick. She was probably hungover.
She gets a call from the museum saying, there was a robbery, something is very wrong. You need to come in immediately. Can you imagine?
I would shit myself. Oh, and she did.
My
If you look in the documentary, she is white as a ghost. She is shaking.
I feel so bad for her in those
videos. Bad for her. Also because it's just, you see it, like, it's, she feels so stupid.
So, and so, like, you feel like something broken in you, I'm sure.
Completely. And, like, how do you, oh, my God. Yeah. So, I mean, she needed a couple trips to Venice, is all I'm saying. Okay? Yeah. She needed to be carried
some
on a boat.
Some restorative
trips. Restorative Ethiopian trips, yeah, and come back. But, oh, so God. She, also, so that guy, was it Rick Abbott? Rick Abbott. Was he under the thing the whole time? Did they find him there?
Yeah, they found him there in the morning.
Guys, I fucking bet he went up, got a snack, ate a piece of fucking pizza, came back down, and then sat there. Because he was, like, smiling in the camera.
And you know, the other suspicious thing about him is that all of the works of art were taken mostly from one wing.
Right.
But there's this one painting that was taken from the blue room downstairs on a whole other part of the museum.
Yeah.
And the frame of it was found in the security desk.
Right.
So you tell me.
Right. So, okay, so what...
And also the motion detectors for the security system say that the only time that someone went in there, into that room, was before the robbers arrived.
Yeah. I think he grabbed that. He put it in there. There's also, people were saying it could, he was kind of doing like a fuck you to the museum. Like, you have all this beautiful stuff and you have zero, like, you have this idiot covering it. Like, he also thought it was so ignorant of them. So there was like that ego, which is actually a lot of robbers, a lot of thieves. There's a bunch of ego involved in it.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of like, I am smarter than you. So with a lot of like scams and stuff is that the con artist, the criminal is like, I am smarter than you idiots and I'm going to prove it to you.
Right.
So there was that little bit of a fuck you.
Yes.
How's your mother? Whatever.
You're really good at that.
I know, I'm really good at that. I'm so good. Of that sort of expression in that. And also the security tapes were taken.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they were taken, but like, there's still like,
some sort of evidence that
they have. They have internal access.
There's
to it.
Some. There's this a
was
hard
the
drive.
This was the 90s where like the tape wasn't videotape. It was literal like ticker tape that was printed of all of the timestamps.
No, it was both. It was
yeah,
video.
You're right,
they
you're
had
right,
video
because right.
somebody took the cassette. So
yes.
So guys, when the crazy thing, and this is all that's happened, and it's also so frustrating as you're watching this, is that it's St. Patrick's Day. Everyone is hungover and their mother, and they arrive.
You're very fixated on everyone's mother.
I really am. I love them all. As a mother, I really love them. They arrive, and everyone, I think, just handled this a little hungover. And no disrespect, but there was this element of like, I think everyone was shocked. Like, these cops are used to homicide. These cops are used to extreme thievery, larceny, like burning buildings.
Very
and they're
bad.
Like, this weird ass fancy museum. And also they kept saying they didn't have the right team. Like,
well, yeah, the FBI there in Boston didn't even have an art team, like an art theft
team. Yeah, or like
there.
A jewelry team. Like,
so
they kept
crazy.
Asking people that were saying like, well, yeah, I'm from like Luxembourg. And we're like, there are other places that have had historical pieces
right.
of art for centuries have these in place in their internal, you know, defense departments.
And here in America.
They had, not in Boston at that time, honey. Elizabeth, Isabella Stewart Gardner gave them so much credit.
Elizabeth.
What's her name? Yeah. Isabella Stewart Gardner gave Boston so much credit.
Oh my
and
God,
they
yeah.
couldn't get it together.
No,
and so then
not.
As they were collecting things and looking at things, people were in there touching stuff. And so you'll see this interview on Netflix and they're like, don't touch the fucking evidence.
Well, yeah, because the woman who showed up for the morning shift, she comes in and someone's already there and...
Like cleaning up?
I think they arrive together and they go inside and there's a crowbar on the floor that they were probably using to pry shit off the walls.
Yeah.
And this guy just like picks up the crowbar and hands it to the morning shift girl and he's like, here. And she's like, oh, I see. He wants me to use this to protect myself in case the robbers are still here.
Yeah.
And then a thought goes through her brain. She's like, oh, my God, this is evidence. I'm touching this.
Yes. But here was my thought. What if all of the guys were sworn to secrecy because they were all guards. No, all of the guards. Mm. I think it was a guard club.
Guard club.
And they were like, I'm getting paid from whatever of this. I'll give you a couple thousand, a couple mil. Just touch some stuff. All you have to do is go in and touch stuff. So I actually think because the guards came in and the Isabella Gardner Museum guards, not the police, touched a lot of stuff. The new morning shift people. And I think they did that on purpose. Ooh. I do. That's my theory. Because I'm like, if you're going that far, if you're going to be so creative, the other thing too is that whomever did this was really scoping this museum out for months and months and months. Right. They knew how it worked. They knew every single shift. They had the evidence. It was clear that they knew where every single thing was in the museum. They even said a couple times, like, some mobsters went and scoped it out for themselves.
Just as patrons,
which is bizarre. And fine, you can love art, but, like, whatever had happened, whomever had been the thief behind this and the mastermind had done extensive work because of the way they went through and the organization of that it went through. So that's why.
And also, lucky for them, it was a rink-a-dink operation over there.
Exactly.
With just like college students manning the desk.
That's why I think they must have paid off Abbott. They must have paid off the other morning guards and been like, hold this. And then also these people are older. They don't want to. This is the most unsolved crime. Nobody wants to go to jail now. Right. You know, all these guards are older people. I'm sure they have like lives and families.
Some of them dead. A lot of people involved in this are dead now.
Oh,
That's the crazy part.
Okay, so one of my favorite FBI agents is this one guy who's so sweet, who's so nice, and was so smart. And
the
so, Gardner, he's so great. He's such a Boston FBI guy. Well, he came in after really they had tampered with all the evidence, after the cops had gone through things, pushed stuff. I think they looked at it as if it was like a homicide. Like they were moving things around, like very gruff. They did not treat it with delicate fingers in any sense. I don't think they knew what they were looking at. No, they had no reference. And it said, their interviews, they're like, I don't know anything about paintings. Like, it's not the guys.
Well, my favorite thing in the last episode of that podcast is a live episode where a lot of them come back. And that guy is one of the guests.
I love him.
And they go down the whole panel and they each say what their favorite piece of art is of the 13 stolen and what they would most like to see. And they get to him. He's laughing. He goes, I don't know. My favorite painting is dogs playing poker. So you tell me. This guy has worked on this case for how many decades? And like he can't say one painting that was stolen.
He can't and doesn't know his favorite. Could care less. He's the best. Because
total objectivity.
Love it. And so he went through and he was a smart one to say, okay, they stole the cassette tapes. I mean, the video tapes. But they didn't steal the hard drive of the computer because at this point there was still a hard drive where you could still have, like Brandon was saying earlier, that ticker tape of like when lights turned on and lights turned off, the motion sensors. So that was really interesting because it showed them going in and out very strategically. And then towards the end, it was kind of erratic. It said,
we're having a time.
Yeah. We have so much fucking free time. Let's just grab a vase and screw it.
These monitors recorded when alarms were going off. So alarms were audibly going off in the museum.
Could have cared less.
And they were just fine with that.
Can you imagine? the relaxation or the drugs you must be on to be like, alarms are going off, I'm fine.
If I set off an alarm in my Airbnb,
oh,
I have a heart attack.
If I set off an alarm in a bank, I'm like, I'm so sorry. Like, I'm like, just take all my money. Anywhere I go, it's so scary. TJ Maxx. It really sends my blood.
Do you often set off the sensors in TJ Maxx?
I often accidentally steal things. I really do. I put things in the stroller as I'm shopping.
She blames them on the child.
I do. And then I leave and I'm like, oh my God, why did I get this weird sponge? And it was like, whoops. And they're fine. TJ Maxx is fine. Yeah. I buy from them all the time. But So alarms going off, everything happening. And this brilliant FBI guy was really the first one to say, I think we have to bring on like some special case people. I think we have to bring on people that handle art, that handle like forgery. And so by the time they kind of got around to this, the paintings are fucking gone, baby.
Oh,
they are gone.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
In the documentary, there's been a huge series of mobsters, mob bosses, in and out of prison,
the
down
cast
on their
of
life,
characters
guys. So many people
are,
involved.
It's really incredible.
It's incredible. My favorite guy was that one guy's sister. So
favorite.
He had just gotten out of prison.
Yes.
He had like shined up himself. Like he was really happy. Everybody said they thought he was doing so much better. He was charismatic. He was lovely. He was sort of a wayward soul. I mean, he was
a new lease on life.
Cute as hell, and just like wore
a
cute jacket,
except when he had that unfortunate bowl cut.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, ugly ass hair, but like I would do him still. He was still like very hot to
wow.
me. I was like, out of prison,
okay.
Yeah, get all in right. here. He was hot, so he comes out and she goes, oh yeah, I saw that painting off his bed.
Oh, she helped him hang it.
She helped him hang it.
And she said, it got this gold frame. And I said, you got to get a new frame. This is a foo-foo frame.
Yeah, you
a foo-foo frame.
Yeah, like as it was a little too girly for him.
In a bachelor's apartment? Are you kidding me?
A foo-foo frame.
A foo-foo frame?
I mean, my God, what will people think? I was like, yes. And so that was the only time that somebody has spoken of seeing one of the pieces. And it's gone now.
That was the Chez Tortoni by Manet.
Oh.
She says, I like to call it the tortellini. What are you talking about? Oh,
and it's
my
a
God.
It's a self-portrait, right? No, it's a man in a cafe.
Yeah, it's a man in a cafe.
And it's beautiful.
And she thought that it was a painting that was of him.
Oh, yeah. She thought he was like, it was a New York City on the boardwalk painting.
Yes, she thought
like
that
a caricature.
He posed for it.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting.
So I deeply think that he could have been one of those people. Now, he's long gone dead. So the cast of characters, who they describe, and the shots that they give to the artist that does all the renderings of who they think
right.
the criminals were.
Yeah,
the sketch. Because you can find the sketch. The sketch looks like an Italian stereotype and a Polish stereotype. I'm not kidding. It's like, here's an Italian, fat or thin. Here's a Polish stereotype,
yeah.
fat or
yeah.
thin. Because mm-hmm. basically they said they think it's a mob guy.
It looks like a Guess Who sketch. If
it's
we're being
so embarrassing. It's so bad. So all of the characters in this, all the cast of characters, all fit those descriptions.
We've got Donati.
We've got
Garante. We've got Ferrara. Maybe the most fascinating was Miles Connor, The guy who had conducted many other art heists.
Okay, so guys, they interviewed this con man who has gotten out of jail. The reason he's gotten out of jail is that he has stolen so many things that he then uses that as collateral to get him less jail time.
This is what I learned through this documentary, is that stolen art is very often a negotiating tool to get your buddies or you out of jail.
Right. Not even for the money. No. And so then the state or the government, whomever it is, can say, oh, look, it's restored. And they get the big check mark that they restored it back to the MoMA or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it really, because the criminal doesn't actually care. So this guy in the interview is so proud. Talk about thinking everyone else is a dumbass. Oh, he is so proud with how smart he is. He was a musician, right?
Yes.
He was like a Mensa candidate. He's brilliant. And so had stolen many pieces of art, has done many heists, got picked up occasionally, but really was an incredible thief. And so they interviewed him and he's sitting there with this trailer in the background. And I'm just like, why isn't anybody just breaking open his house? Nobody goes in. There's no search warrant, but he is giving them all of the talk of, well, this is how we do if I did it or something. Or this is who I think could have done it.
They say he physically couldn't have done it because he was in jail at the time of the
heist. Yeah, but you can train anybody.
Yes, exactly. And I think the question of who stole the art is sort of a double question. It's like, who stole the art and who were they working for?
Right. Who was it for?
Yeah.
Because who was the henchman that stole it for the big boss? And so he gives an amazing interview all about other heists that he's been on and how to do an art heist and how he would do it. And so that was really interesting too, is that he, in the documentary, he gives a completely different point of view as basically a convicted criminal. Yes. I loved him.
And then the other time that someone saw or claimed to have seen one of the pieces was this guy, Bill Youngworth. He was a caretaker for Miles Connor. Uh-huh. So when Miles Connor was away in jail, this guy was sort of taking care of his place. And he raided that trailer and was trying to sell some of the stuff that he had in the trailer.
So basically, he was trying to steal from Miles Connor.
He lures this reporter from the Herald out to Red Hook, Brooklyn.
Okay, this was super creepy. So they have so this has been obviously going on for so long, so that any reporter who picks up or gets a lead is so excited that maybe they could break this 20-year heist scam. So he comes out and says, the criminal says, I have something for you. So Alan and I are watching this and we're like, who in their right mind, what journalist would get into a car with a convicted criminal, would travel to Red Hook in an abandoned building? It was super creepy.
And it was dark. He had to use a flashlight to see. So basically this guy pulls out a painting in a roll. First of all, very frightening.
In a storage container.
To roll up paintings.
When they told the museum people that it was a rolled up painting, they were more upset about that than anything. Can't roll a painting.
Deeply horrified.
Yeah, well, it was. These people don't care.
But that was basically turned out to be a hoax, and it wasn't it. He claimed to have had this storm in the Sea of Galilee. Basically, the guy says, I need more proof that that's it, and he provides a paint chip. And they run analysis on the paint chip, and that color paint was not used on the storm in the Sea of Galilee.
So either it was that, or he just got, I think it could have actually been it, and he just got some bunk paint chip, to say, sure, here it is. I don't think they even knew. Well, what was so crazy is that once you understood that, paintings were a form of currency, and these, master artworks were a form of currency, it did start to make sense that multiple mob bosses and mob families would either be trading, adjusting, interested in this to help each other and help their families out. Because at this time, too, is when they really cracked down on the mob. Now, the FBI got into a bunch of stuff. And I think it was, Alan said, is when they first started, what is the thing? Oh, shoot. It's called, intent to do intent. What's it called? It's like when you, intent. When you go tenting. It was this phrase that's going to drive me crazy. And it started to be convictable if you were about or knowledge of, or if you were co-conspirating of a crime. So at that point, that's when they started bugging a ton of mob bosses, and they could get a ton of people in jail for conspiracy.
Turns out every mob boss has
loves to talk,
an auto shop.
Yeah.
Where they make sauce on Sunday.
Loves it. It's so true. It's so true, guys. This documentary goes through every single person. You're like, and this was his auto shop, and that was his auto shop. This was his mom's auto shop. And so they just went through. So basically, all of these mob bosses got caught similarly in the end of the 80s, early 90s. And then it makes sense that these paintings would become like a form of currency. So as they go through all of these people throughout the documentary, every single guy is fucking dead now.
Yes.
Everyone's dead.
I mean, some of them die of old age. Some of them die in prison.
No, a lot of them die from hits.
Yes. Their heads show up in
constantly
cars.
Heads flopping all over the place. Just you can't keep them straight. They're just all over. They're rolling down the hills.
And I love the way that the documentary shows them dying, where it's like their face on the map of Boston and then just an X.
You mean the big X on their faces? It was so funny. It was like one guy from like all the way down from like the south was some mob guy, and they're like, it could not be him. So they didn't look into it, but it's like the paintings travel. The mob families travel.
Well, they say it went from Boston to Maine to Connecticut to Philadelphia.
Yes. And there was a big group in Pittsburgh that was dealing with it. Oh my God. And so, of course it is, though. Because, of course, if this is a form of currency and helping your guys out, you're going to do whatever it takes. Yeah. And so it was interesting because the second that the cops got a little bit closer, it was very interesting. The mob, they had to have had, I think they could have had somebody on the inside. Like a mob person or, an informant or something. Because not the FBI. I think the mobs had people and friends working on the forces. Because anytime the FBI said, and we were so close and we thought this guy might do it and we were going to go to his house, he's dead. Yeah. So, like, they knew. They knew when he was coming by. Oopsie. They knew when the FBI was coming by and they would just straight out kill them.
Well, and it was really interesting when that guy, I think Bobby Gentile's house, his house was like raided by the FBI for like hours.
Yes.
And I loved his little...
like in the shed too. They're like, there was a shed.
His little asshole lawyer. Who's like, I don't know what you're going to find. His house is totally torn up. And then there's a night where they think he's going to die. He's in jail and they think that he's on his deathbed. He actually didn't die then.
Okay. But, another time.
But... they think he's like going to not live through the night, and the lawyer goes and he's like, you know, if you tell me where the paintings are, you can die at home with your wife and not here
and your children.
And he just goes, there ain't no paintings. And I don't know if that's like I really don't know where they are, or if I do tell you, like, they may like just murder my wife or something like that.
I mean, it was basically snitches get stitches to the end.
Yes.
Like, and they were holding over him. Like, we knew he loved his wife. We knew he loved his family. But that just shows, I mean, any great mob boss would just take it to the grave.
Yeah.
any great mob boss knows, you don't snitch. Jeez.
Well, you're an insider.
I mean, of course. I cannot wait to be asked. It'd be the best part I've never auditioned for.
You are just a lady in waiting for your mob moment.
I'm like, who wants?
Oh,
I'll get the perm. I'll do whatever it takes. I'll get the fake nails.
Always a bridesmaid.
Never a mob bride.
Never a mafia bride.
No, never. So that is what is so ridiculously frustrating about this entire thing. I wish I had an end. I wish I had a wrap up.
That's the thing. It's like the documentary doesn't even know how to wrap
the documentary. Up. That was the most frustrating part at the end of the documentary. They didn't know how to wrap it up. And it was just like, Al and I were watching it so frustrated because it said, here are all these tangents, and that's the story. And it never brought it together. I really think that what brought it together was the guards. I think it was the group of guards. I think there was a bro pact. I think, why don't you ask any of the band members of Shitty High, Astor?
Rick Abbott.
Like, he was going to all these parties talking shit. Like, why didn't anybody interview them? Also,
I wish at this moment I had his band name to throw out, but I don't.
I'm sure they were fabulous when you were drunk. But they also, in the documentary, they had this couple that was interviewed that was thrilled to be interviewed. They're like, we saw the eyewitnesses.
How did we forget about the eyewitnesses?
Well, because no one in the documentary or the police force or the FBI gave a shit about the eyewitnesses.
They have no regard.
Eyewitnesses start the first episode and then you never hear from them again.
Literally three people who saw the quote-unquote cops.
They were dying to talk.
And later, when they found out like the evidence that was actually entered onto the record from their statements, there was stuff that they said that did not appear on the record, and there was stuff that they didn't say that did appear on the record.
Yes, and also, like, they saw the records, and the people, the eyewitnesses said, saw the notebooks and saw what the police were writing down. And they're like, I never said that.
Yes.
That's not true.
And so that's how you know there was something on the
inside. There's somebody on the inside, yeah. And that was definitely an informant on the mob side, and God bless. I don't know. I also, like, the worst thing, so from an artist's point of view and from, like, an art historian point of view, it just showed how heartbroken all of these people were that the paintings were destroyed. But to me, it just showed how out of touch all of these people are. I mean, if your life is on the line, if you're trying to get your husband out of jail, you don't give a fuck about some old guy's painting. Like, it's so interesting because they kept saying, like, how could they do this to us? How could they do this to us? It's not about you. This guy's already dead. This artist is already dead.
For the achievement of a man who lived hundreds of years ago.
Yes, and also, like, he's done other paintings. That's not his only painting. Like, that's the thing, too, is, like, these people have done, like, 45 paintings, 30 paintings. And so these robbers, these mobsters, are just like, who cares? This is going to help me right now. Like, it's doing nothing sitting in a museum. That was the other thing. I was like, they're so out of touch. They don't know that this money could have saved somebody's life. So it could have saved somebody's kid who was ransom. Right. Like, we don't know the full story of what was happening. But this shock and awe of these rich people that poor or rich people would take something of theirs. They're like, how could it be? And it's like, but literally all art is stolen.
How could someone dare take the thing we barely protected?
I know. Like, and that we have stolen from somebody else. Like, God. Art doesn't come to a museum for fun.
Oh, no.
You don't go here, enjoy this. It is because somebody's dead. It's because somebody else has been robbed. It's because they've been pillaged.
Isabella Stewart Gardner, as much as I love her, was like no angel.
No. I mean, we love her, but talk about out of touch.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
She was like, well, America doesn't have culture. I guess I'll just invent it and bring it over here.
And she did. And God bless. But I'm just saying that it is embarrassing how shocked these rich elitist people are.
Yeah.
And the people that come in and they're like, well, nobody listened to me and I can't believe it. And it was like, oh, also, you think you're the smartest person in the room. That is so crazy.
That everyone has universal reverence for works of art.
Regard for their opinion. Like, everybody said, everybody had their own idea, their own opinion, just like we do on this podcast of like, what happened? And you hear them and they are just like flummoxed that they didn't get a second interview, that they didn't have a chance to solve it themselves. Like, it's a very bizarre dichotomy of like, you kind of look stupid. But also, I get
out of touch is the perfect
word. Out of touch.
They just don't understand the perspective.
And they're still out of touch. I don't know, maybe. Because when you went, did you feel, how was the museum now? Because at the time, in this documentary, it did feel that the museum patron, that the museum, like, what is it, the board, was very out of touch at the time.
I mean, it was like any other museum.
But was there sort of like a kind of silliness about it that everybody knew it was stolen? Like, because on the website, they now have the robbery. Well, is there sort of like a tongue-in-cheek of like, we know this happened, that's why we're famous now?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's very much the like, I took like the audio tour in every room, and it very much walks you through what happened.
Uh-huh.
But, and it's like very reverent. It's all narrated by the chief curator currently.
Uh-huh.
And she's very, very reverent about like, this whole museum was Isabella's vision. And right now, her vision is incomplete, and we just hope that one day it'll be complete again.
Right.
Yeah. That's sort of the ethos of the museum now.
Right. And so you want to carry out that dream, but it is interesting because I feel that now the museum sort of has an understanding of it and sort of like knows what's happening. Whereas before, the people that were the curators were like, what? Someone stole from me? And it's like, yeah, bitch. There was a gun to his head. Of course he stole. I would too.
You had millions of dollars of unprotected artifacts just like sort of chilling.
Chilling on that wall.
Oh my God.
Oh my gosh. I know.
Well, it's so funny because when the museum first opened, Isabella Stewart Gardner like didn't really know how to go about like having a museum.
Oh.
She basically hired like a bunch of art students from Harvard to sort of be
docents. She loves her students.
Yeah, she loves students. But like people had to basically tell her like you need to like chill out just a little bit.
Okay.
Because like she was still very much her collection and her baby.
Yes, and
she would basically follow around the tours, be like, don't touch that. Please stay on the carpet. Like she would just like scream at people.
Oh yeah.
And I mean sort of for good reason, because like in the tapestry room, people would like come in with little scissors and cut a little thread off the tapestry to take home. Because again, like the reverence for art like didn't exist yet.
Yeah, and they're still learning it. Yeah. And also, who cares? I don't know. It's so hard. Like art is so that piece of fabric. It is special and it is valuable, but it is just because some people say it is. You know what I mean? Like, there's probably a ton of tapestries in that time and era that weren't saved, but that one was saved and that one was deemed, you don't know?
I mean, they're still like beautiful.
Crazy.
It's like, for me, when I'm standing in front of like a Rembrandt or something,
forget it.
Or even like one of those tapestries, it's like someone hundreds of years ago spent so much time.
Yes.
Making this
exquisite
piece of thing that could have just turned to dust.
Or hundreds of people.
But no, someone cared about it and they preserved it.
Right.
And now I'm standing here in awe of it.
That is true.
Like,
but I'm
that's
saying,
what museums are for me.
Yes. But I'm saying the thief goes, well, why not the other guy that other one the guy did? Like for them, they don't have that reverence.
Well, yeah, and the museum's problem is that they like couldn't accept the nihilism of the world.
Well, yeah, and the museum thing is that it does have to be, you do have to get on the viewer's level in some way.
Right.
You do have to get down to approachable and also for them to then appreciate it.
Yeah.
You know, and also the community to appreciate
it. Well, that's what I think that museum in particular does now. Is
yes.
That like they start where you are and they like want to foster an appreciation.
That's what it is.
Whereas like when you go, they recommend that you don't try to like see everything in the room, that instead you like look around, you see one thing that you gravitate towards.
Okay.
Spend 15, 20 minutes with it,
mm-hmm.
and then move on. Go to the next
That's
room.
That's great.
Yeah.
My aunt, who's studied like museum curating and management and tours, like she's a master's in something with museums. I'm sorry, I don't know what it's called, but she says, go into the museum, find the one that you like the most, and then we'll discuss why.
Mm.
And she's like, I said that with all my new people. Anybody who's like intimidated by museums, just go in and say, why do I like it so much?
Yes.
Is it the fiery red paint? Is it how it looks very basic and maybe I could draw it? Or is it reminds me of my grandmother's garden? Like, find out why you like it, and then it can kind of get your inside it, which doesn't sound like the museum at the time. When Isabella started it and during the robbery, it seemed like they were just like, here's awe, here's pomp and circumstance, like here's beauty.
Yes.
Yeah, bitches, you never saw it before, did ya? And it was very like distant from the people. The cat feels very deeply about this museum.
He really does. Well, one thing that's really interesting, I have an aunt who is a nurse practitioner and she also teaches, and every year with her students, she does this this workshop at an art museum in Rochester.
Okay.
Where they basically take a bunch of nursing students to the museum for
wow.
the day. And they basically spend a day like sort of learning how to engage and like interpret and really analyze a piece of art.
Okay.
And basically you come away with it thinking like, the amount of time and patience that I had for investigating my experience with this painting is how I should approach working with a patient.
Wow.
Like, I shouldn't just walk up to it and say, like,
this is what I think.
Yeah, this is what I think. I'm just, like, projecting something onto this piece or this patient. I should, like, observe this thing about them and ask a question about that And then maybe I learn something else about it. Mm-hmm. And I respond to another element of it. And then I sort of, yeah, exactly.
That's so interesting. Yes. And you could pull that tapestry.
Pull that tapestry.
Until you get out of jail. Until you get your son out of jail. Until you get America out of jail. I love it. I love it. So I think, are we done? Do we feel that we've like solved the case that it was that?
We've cracked the case wide open.
Mm-hmm. So guys, thank you so much for listening. Thank you, Brandon,
for having me.
Where can people stalk you and fall in love with you?
You can find me. I'm pretty sure just at Brandon Zaloy on Instagram.
Okay, amazing. And we're going to put that in the notes. He's the most luxurious Instagram I've ever seen. It's very well curated, like the museum.
The cat that you've heard tonight.
Oh, this cat is so present.
You can put a face to the little
You really shirts. Can, and you need to. Thank you so much, guys. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you to our Patreon patrons. We will be back next week. And I'm so glad to be back. I missed you scammers so deeply. I'll see you next week. Bye.
Stay scamming, bestie.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.